Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled, and we want that post-burnout growth for you, too.
Hi, Fried fam. It's Sarah, and I am back with real coaching in real time. And today, we are talking with Jenny, and we are going to talk her through a challenge in her potential burnout recovery, and you get to listen in. Why do I say potential? Because she's not sure if she's burnt out. So we're going to start there today. But why are we even doing this real coaching in real time thing? Because we see it as a win-win-win. The person being coached gets support. You get to learn through their experience. And I get to show you what I do best, which is coaching, guiding, leading. And you get to see that vulnerability is strength, that help is available, and that change is possible one doable step at a time. If this resonates with you, if you see yourself in Jenny's story, please share this episode with a friend and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts, because your engagement helps us reach more people and end burnout culture one personal recovery at a time. Are you ready? Let's get into it. So welcome to Fry, Jenny.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here and sharing your story. So when you applied, you mentioned that you weren't quite sure if you were burnt out. And I realized that oftentimes Kate and I on this podcast just assume y'all already know that you're burnt out, right? You're here because you know you're fried. And so although we absolutely have given you the criteria to determine whether or not you're burnt out, we don't talk about it as often as we talk about, like, you know, you're fried. What do we do about it? So let's start with helping you determine if you're burnt out or not. So why don't you share with us all the reasons that make you question whether or not you're burnt out?
Yeah, sure. So a lot of the reasons why I question whether I'm burnout or not is I feel like I'm fluctuating between being okay and not being okay. So like exhaustion. Some days I feel like I can conquer the world, and other days I feel like everything is just so overwhelming, right? My sleep patterns are all over the place. Sometimes my anxiety levels are really high, depending on what I have to do, things like that, right? I feel like the biggest part is some days I feel like I can conquer everything, and other days I can't even like do a small step. It feels like it's too much. And it comes in waves. And so because it comes in waves, I can't tell if I'm in burnout, if I'm about to burn out, if I'm going back and forth, if I'm flirting with burnout. And that's, I think, the biggest confusion for me.
Is it like 50-50 at this point, as far as like conquering the world and then not being able to do hardly anything?
So, yeah, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I would have told you 80-20, right? Because it was a rough patch for a bit. But yeah, I think that sometimes it's 50-50, sometimes it's 80-20, sometimes it's 20-80. So it's not totally consistent, but it's patches of like, and maybe those patches are getting longer of times where I do feel like it's closer to a 50-50.
Okay. I can understand why that's confusing, because you, depending on which lens you're looking through, which kind of filter you have on that day, like if you feel like you can conquer the world, sometimes we forget that yesterday was a bad day or last week was nearly impossible.
Yeah.
Right. So let's review how to know whether or not you're burnt out. What are the symptoms of burnout? And just a reminder that right now, burnout is not a diagnosable condition for doctors. They cannot prescribe or diagnose you as burnt out, which is a part of what's challenging about having burnout or not, mm-hmm. because doctors, at least in America, very much are like, well, I can't diagnose this. So is it valid?
Right.
Right. And then they'll give you a diagnose for some of the other symptoms you're experiencing rather than seeing it as this like collective holistic condition. So the World Health Organization first defined this in 2019, and that sort of gave words to what a lot of people had been feeling for a very long time. Here's what those words are. I don't 100% agree with this definition, but we're going to go with it for right now. So the World Health Organization said, burnout is a syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. It's characterized by these three dimensions. One, feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion.
Yep.
Two, increased mental distance from one's job or feelings of negativism or cynicism related to one's job.
Yeah.
You're experiencing that as well. I heard you say yes about the energy depletion. Mm-hmm. And then third is reduced professional efficacy or perceived reduced professional efficacy. So sometimes you feel like you're spinning your wheels and you're not getting yeah. anywhere. So yep. maybe it depends on what kind yeah. of a day or week you're having. So check, check, check. According mm-hmm. to the World Health Organization, you are burnt out.
Yeah. Okay.
They also had this note, which is the part that I don't entirely agree with. Burnout refers specifically to phenomena in the occupational context and should not be applied to describe experiences in other areas of life. We know that people can be burnt out even if they're not working. There are caregivers who don't technically, quote unquote, have an income from the job that they do, especially if you're caring for family members. They can be burnt out. You can be burnt out as a mother. You can be burnt out from an abusive relationship. You can be burnt out from we've heard how many burnout stories. We've got over 300 episodes on Fried the Burnout podcast, and every single interview, someone tells their burnout story. So there's as many burnout stories as there are people, but there are common denominators within their stories, which are these three things for sure, and some yeah. other things. So you are working.
Yes, I am.
Would you say this potentially comes from your job, this burnout you're experiencing?
I think, yes, it could potentially come from my job. I think it could also potentially come from my home environment. You know, I have a preschooler and a teenager. So I thankfully have a supportive husband and he's great, but it's a lot, you know, going on. And my employment is high level work. I'm an attorney. So that's also a lot. So yes, I guess is the short answer.
Right. For lawyers or like the law as a career is steeped in burnout culture, right? It has its own version of burnout culture. Mothering toddlers, preschoolers, and teenagers, each of those separately, we all know yeah. toddlers are tough, right? Three-nagers, we call them that for a reason because teenagers are tough and you've got one of each. Mm-hmm. So basically, and I'm glad you have a supportive husband. So that if we're going to think of it this way, I would say like the supportive husband mm-hmm. is a burnout protective factor.
Yeah.
And law as a career might be more of a burnout risk factor. Because although it's, you know, a great income, you're helping people, you're serving, you're in a career where you feel like you have a purpose and a mission, mm-hmm. which can be very fulfilling, depending on if your workload's appropriate or if right. you have psychological safety at your firm. Or inside your own body, that's yeah. going to make the difference long-term, along with many other factors in the web of causation, which yeah. we're not going to get totally into, but that's where I was pulling information from Kate's research. She created 6 different categories of burnout protective factors and burnout risk factors, and they help you understand why you're burnt out. Yeah. So that may be something that would be useful for you to do as an exercise on your own. It's actually one of our free resources, and we can put that link in the show notes. Actually, I'll do that. So if it's something you want to do, you can do that. And others, Fried Fam listeners, if you haven't done the Web of Causation exercise yet, we'll put that in the show notes for you. So let's back up for a second. We just confirmed those three kind of criteria for you. You are burnt out. What's coming up for you when you're like, oh, snap?
Yeah, not surprised. Probably been in denial about it. I think part of it's because since I'm quote unquote functioning, or at least on the outside, then it's like, well, am I really burnt out? Because I'm still going to work and I'm still, you know, doing the thing and packing the lunches and picking up the kids or whatever it is, you know, and having the calls and cooking the dinners or whatever. So am I really burnt out, you know, and maybe because it's a spectrum and not, you know, one end or the other. And that's why it was more confusing to me. Because I don't,
right.
Because I feel like I'm burnt out sometimes and then I don't. And so that's the, maybe I have I'm having a, what's it called? Cognitive dissonance about it.
Right. Makes sense. And that's often why, because it's often high achieving, mission-driven people that end up here as listeners of Fry the Burnout podcast. And the kind of drive that high achievers tend to have is like, we, you know, unless you literally cannot keep going,
yep,
there's no reason to stop. Right. Yep. And that's why so many people end up completely fried, literally cannot get off the floor or out of bed before they recognize they're burnt out.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we're having these conversations. So potentially people can stop, pause, take a time out, and maybe start to take some recovery steps before you're all the way to a burnt pile of ashes. Because I think burnout is a spectrum. And I think at first, right, like, we call it burnout for a reason, because it's like a fire, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a fire in your life where it's like, it's burning and it's blazing and it starts to get out of control, like a wildfire in the forest. And when everything's on fire, we are running on adrenaline. We are high anxiety. We are high functioning for the most part. We may be in complete overwhelm, but right, it feels almost like there's a wildfire blazing in our life. But when a wildfire is blazing in a forest, it's moving through the forest. There are parts of the forest that are now a burnt pile of ashes or like trees that are scarred and burned and maybe still smoldering. And then there's a part that's still on fire. And there's that line you walk on the edge. I mean, you can't walk it as a human, but you know what I mean? It's like parts of you are on fire. Parts of you are like, oh, I'm done. I'm toast. Yeah. And if you let that fire burn out and use up all of your fuel, all of your resources, all of your physical energy, emotional energy, and these feelings of exhaustion and, you know, cynicism and reduced efficacy get worse and worse.
Yeah.
And eventually you can't get off the floor or out of bed. Then we would say, okay, your whole wildfire is out because you've run out of fuel. You've burned through it. And now you're a burnt pile of ashes, all of you.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you're here before that place. Because it's easier to recover when you are not recovering from dust as your starting point.
Yeah.
The hard part is giving yourself permission and starting to take the steps that protect you, that help you recover, that help you regain your energy before you've hit rock bottom, which is a pretty potent turning point for many people.
That makes 100% sense. And I think that explanation is really, really clear and vivid in my mind's eye. You know, I feel like I don't, like, my margin, not margin of error, but margin of
like buffer
bandwidth is so reduced. Like I said, a couple of weeks ago when I filled out the thing, I was not in a great, you know, place, but mentally, emotionally, everything. And that part of that was due to really difficult clients, like unbelievably difficult clients. One of those like borderline abusive and
to that, you,
to me. Yeah. Like just very aggressive, nasty, you know, I ended up terminating representation, but I think that dealing with that where otherwise normally I've been practicing law for 11 years, like a difficult client or different attorney, opposing counsel shouldn't make me do that. And I was not okay emotionally. And like, it was just too much for me to deal with, you know, my nervous system was all over the place. And I think it's because of that bandwidth is so small. And like you're saying, because part of my force is on fire. you know?
Right. So the more tired you get, the smaller kind of window of tolerance you have, right? A smaller bandwidth or capacity.
Yeah.
And so anything that takes you out of that, it either puts you in full overwhelm or like complete shutdown.
Yep.
And it takes longer and longer. Right. Teetering between the two. And it takes longer and longer to get out of that overwhelm or that shutdown and back into your window of tolerance, like functional capacity.
Yeah.
So everything you say just confirms more and more. I'm sorry, you're burnt out, and I'm glad you're here. So one of the things that we talk about here is small doable steps. High achievers don't like to take small, teeny tiny bite-sized steps. We do big actions. We want big change. We want results. We want, you know, to check all the boxes. So this is a part of what's hard, especially when you haven't hit this like rock bottom.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to do with you today is help you find what the one next best step is for you from this place that you're in right now, kind of half burnt, half on fire, so that you can start taking steps in your burnout recovery from this place.
Yeah.
So maybe you slow down your rate of burnout recovery so you can eventually stop depleting yourself and start to fill yourself back up. So that said, do you know what area of your life, your work or home could use? Like, is there an area where you're like, I just don't know what to do, but I know that something needs to change? Is there one specific scenario that we can hone in on to create one thing you can aim to do differently or experience differently?
Yeah. So I think most people's initial reaction would say home life. I think I already started doing that. So I'm not sure that's what I need. Like I used to have to, for example, and I'll answer your question. For example, my preschool used to be at a school where I'd have to make breakfast and lunch and take it and the milk and the uniform, and this, you know, all that stuff. And even though the preschool was right around the corner, it was one more thing, mental load wise. Like, what do I send my kid for school and what do I put together? And is the kid going to eat it? Or how do I not send the same thing every day? So we ended up switching our youngest to another school where all that's taken care of, you know, as part of it. And so I noticed a difference already not having to pack a teenager's lunch. I don't have to pack the teenager's lunch. I do it because I want to see my husband and our oldest leave in the morning, but not packing the teenager's lunch and not packing the preschooler's lunch. That already made a difference. So I know that little things can help. I think I would want to think about how work-wise, and I don't know the answer to that, right? I could maybe make things better. And that may be an institutional issue, not necessarily something that I could fix on my end. And I'm at a really great firm. So we have a remote work and we're hybrid and it's right around the corner. So I think I need, I know I'm kind of rambling right now. I'm trying to think. I think I need.
That's okay. I love it. You know, you're painting me a little picture of all the things you're working with.
I think I need, thank you for that, some way to maybe structure, that's probably a very typical type A answer, structure my week in a way where I'm not getting pulled in 50 different directions. So the way that the practice is, you talk with clients, you talk with potential clients, you have schedules with opposing counsel, you may have a hearing, you may have to talk to a doctor. We do a lot of medical related stuff where you get interrupted. So I don't know if maybe picking like on these 2 days, I only do these things or something to give myself a little bit more structure maybe so I don't feel pulled so much, that might be more helpful in that setting for my caseload. Does that make sense?
Right. Because switching between all these different
things,
aspects of your job can be time consuming and energy consuming to literally like you, it's like you're putting on several different hats throughout the day.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you mentioned like maybe time blocking, this kind of stuff goes here, this kind of stuff goes here. I'm guessing you can't fully control all those things or maybe all the moments you're getting interrupted. But if there are things that you are personally scheduling or someone is scheduling with you, I think you probably could time block those things in a way that it's like, if, I don't know, are you using an online scheduler at all?
So we have an online scheduler. Like we have assistants So instead of having, like in a lot of firm setups, it's an attorney and assistant assigned to each other. In our scenario, we have an attorney and then there's a bunch of assistants and they kind of do a wheel of when a case gets attached. So you end up working with everybody essentially. So they all have access to the calendar. They, you know, and I've already started blocking out time so that calls aren't placed there. They don't always get paid. That's not always followed if it was blocked out. So like that may not be something I can fix. You know, thankfully my practice isn't in court all the time like other attorneys. It's a lot more writing focused, even though there are court stuff, but a lot of it is not necessarily those hearings that the court just automatically puts up. So I have more control than somebody who's going to trial or going to court every week or every day. Did that answer your question?
Yes. My thought is it the boundary of the assistant? What makes your time block disregarded? Is it a desire to please the client and just give them whatever available time they're like, what, why isn't that boundary being respected?
Yeah. So I think yes to both. One is sometimes the assistant doesn't respect it and I have to remind them I need to do like that's blocked off for a reason. And then also it's the either the people pleasing because the client needs to talk or like if it's a potential client because we have to bring a pipeline and then it's like, I can't take this call, but I should take this call because if there's a potential client, I should sign them up so I can have the case so we can have the fees come in, blah, 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 blah. So yeah.
Yeah. So this does sound like a boundary issue and it's maybe a boundary issue in a couple of different places.
Yeah.
And it is putting, well, the firm first, because yeah. you were pleasing the client and getting them in ASAP, but ultimately for the comfort, you know, like to get the money in, like secure the case, get the money in.
Right.
Rolling into the business and get everything, get the ball rolling in general. And, you know, that's a version of people pleasing that is an example of like everybody else's needs getting thrown out the window.
Yeah. Yeah.
When the reality is like you all do need to have what you need. You need a certain amount of resources to do your job well, to keep the company well.
Mm-hmm.
So which aspects of your schedule do you want to tackle first? Cause let's break this down. Like we could try to tackle the whole schedule. Just let's pick one thing that you think would make the biggest difference. One boundary that if you could have it in place would help.
I think a boundary that might be helpful in place is to have maybe set calls, maybe not the ones that come in around, but set calls on particular days and or times. So that at least there's some like calls that I can control, right?
Right.
Versus the ones that I can't control for whatever, because, you know, judges chambers is calling or whatever other situation, you know?
Right. I mean, that is a huge shift that we often really focus on taking in burnout recovery is focus on what you can control because what you can't.
Yeah.
If you focus on that, you're caught in the tornado or the chaos of everything's happening to you. Yeah. So if you can gain control and feel empowered in the choices that you can make, that would make the difference. It tips the scales kind of in your favor and reminds you that you matter and you are taking care of yourself and it's a great foundation. It builds a great foundation.
Yeah.
So which calls can you control and what boundary do you want to put around that? Do you need to make a request of an assistant? Do you need to set the boundary with yourself? What needs to happen?
I think I need to do both. I need to set the boundary with myself because I'm the first one to break those boundaries. Unfortunately, probably why I'm here, right? One of the many reasons why I'm here.
And I think that is also a slippery slope, right? Yeah. If you can't hold the boundary, why would anybody else hold it for you?
Exactly. Yeah. And then set the boundary with the assistants as well. And then also with the clients, you know, like I take calls on X and X days, or like you want to chat, I'll take calls on X and X. Cause I think really what, obviously I'm in burnout. We figured that out at the beginning, but what really put me over the edge is like you said, the my bandwidth, right? My capacity is I had like three really extremely difficult, somewhat aggressive in their own way clients at the same time. And it was just too much for me to handle. And I know I'm not the first or the last is going to deal with that. Like you know, boohoo, but it was, that's what made me be like, you know what, this is not working. Like, this is not how I'm supposed to be functioning, you know?
Right. If we just look at it from a data standpoint, it just required too many resources, yeah. Right? It yeah. literally poured gasoline on the wildfire that was blazing yeah. and ate up a bunch of your wood, your yeah. resources, right? And it's too much. I just want to point out, you added a little self-judgment in there. Boo-hoo. You know, wah, wah.
Yeah.
Let's not do that.
Okay. Sorry.
That okay. only, right? That only adds insult to injury. It's almost yeah. like pouring more gas on the fire.
Yeah.
Right? It sucked for you.
Yeah. It did. It was awful.
And it was awful enough that you're like, I don't want to do that again. So why you're putting these boundaries in place are to help anticipate, knowing this is how it goes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. But if I can at all prevent this from happening, I want to have safeguards in place. That's what yeah. boundaries are safeguards that let you know that you have your own back and let others know what you will do if this scenario happens again.
Yeah. Okay. So then setting up specific boundaries, giving my assistant those boundaries, me following those boundaries and saying, as an example, you know, I only take calls on Tuesdays and Thursdays for argument's sake from this time to this time. And otherwise I'm not available, because then I need to do all the other things that I have to do with the deadlines and all the other things that follow. I think that'll help. And then the calls I can't control them, but at least I have my set calls. I know what's happening with that. I think that would be really helpful. And I tried to do that kind of sort of by blocking out my calendar, but I don't think I was for me or for the clients or for my assistants clear enough on that, because it's not happening. So
how do you want to be more clear this time?
Well, I can tell the clients, oh, you want to schedule a call? Okay. I take my calls on, as an example, Tuesdays and Thursdays between 10 and 2, you know, this is what I have available. And then maybe even do some way to electronically block it or set something, so that way those times are available and the other ones are not, specifically for calls.
Most online schedulers, you can do that. You yeah. can say these types of appointments only from these hours yeah. to these hours.
Yeah.
Or if the assistant is doing it, right, mm-hmm. they just need to know about that boundary, and you need to say, this is firm. Like, yeah. please do not, unless it is an absolute emergency. An emergency is not just a client wants it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause then there'd be times, like as an example, or an assistant, and it's not just me, it's across the firm. And I think it's just because there's pressure, for lack of a better term, to like move cases and help people and produce and be excellent and blah, blah, blah. We're a firm of like absolute excellence, which is great, but exhausting. Or assistants have put like 5 calls back to back in a time block, 30-minute call. They're just not feasible. And I've told them before, I cannot do that. Like, I'm not I can't eat. I can't finish one call before I have to jump to the other. Like,
you can't pee.
I can't pee. Exactly. I can't drink water. I can't anything. If my call goes over, I'm jumping to the one. I have to task switch. I don't have time to even gather my thoughts and figure out who I'm talking to next time. Things like that. And I think that's work, you know, that I need to rein that in.
So it sounds like you do know what's working for you and what isn't.
Yeah.
So it might be worth, I mean, I do recommend one thing at a time. So if this yeah. is the one you start with, these yeah. calls and control, do it. And then move on to the next thing after this is sorted.
Yeah.
I need pee breaks.
Yeah.
I need food breaks.
I need to eat lunch.
And, yeah. and like make it clear to whoever's answering the phone and or what you set up in your auto schedule or your online yeah. scheduler, that like there are built in little breaks, even if they're 5 minutes, and like, or like meetings are no longer an hour, they're 55 minutes or 25 yeah. minutes. So there's yeah. always a 5-minute buffer yeah. between things to yeah. at least drink water and go pee
yeah.
or have a snack or whatever, gather your thoughts, all those things. That's how you start putting little deposits of energy back into your capacity.
Yeah.
That's how you build your bandwidth and your buffer again.
Yeah. I think this one, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So this one step helps a lot, because part of my issue was like taking a step back and looking at the dumpster fire and be like, I don't know where to start. You know, like, it sounds very obvious in a way, but at the same time, when you're looking, trying to fix everything at once, you just like, I don't know where to start. Like, I don't know what to tackle first. Like, how do I fix
this? Exactly.
Right?
When it's your dumpster fire, it's hard to see. It's hard to back up enough to get an objective perspective. That's exactly what coaching is good for, or coaching and or outside help of some kind, depending on the help that you need.
Yeah.
We need objective perspective and someone to see the possibilities from the outside for us and support us and bolster us, be a resource that adds to your capacity and your resilience or your like bandwidth and buffer, and say, let's break this into one little thing that you can start with. It's in your control, because then that can snowball in a good way. One thing you control at a time, and then you start to feel more in control than you feel overwhelmed most of the time.
Yeah.
Obviously it teeters while you're still working on this, but I'm so glad to hear that you're like, oh my God, thank you. This really gave me insight into where to start.
Yeah. Cause that's really how I felt. And I feel like the other problem I have, and I'm probably not the only one. I feel like I have a time scarcity problem. So I always feel like I don't have enough time to do stuff. Not enough time to this, not enough time to exercise, not enough time to go to bathroom, not enough time to eat, not enough time, you know? And that then adds to the overwhelm and exhaustion and fatigue and cognitive, because there's not enough time, you know? And I know that's not necessarily true. I mean, it may be true, right? Or maybe I just need to cut away and rearrange in order to use the time better. I don't know if that's the right word, better.
I mean, yes and yes to all those things, right? One, it's oftentimes, especially like really efficient high achievers, we're trying to fit 36 hours worth of, of stuff into 24 hours, and it's just not realistic. And so of course you're going to feel time scarce, because there literally isn't enough time to do the things that you've laid out.
Yeah.
But also, like, the more depleted you are, the more just scarce we feel in general. You're depleted, your energy scarce.
Yeah.
And so then time starts to, cause you're just like, oh God, there's not enough anywhere. Yep. And you just feel this like desperate feeling.
Yep.
But somewhere, somehow that has to change so you can start filling up. You can start giving to yourself, start receiving, so you feel less scarce. Cause the more full you are, the less scarce you feel, whether it's about time, energy, or money, really.
Yeah.
I consider those kind of the three main categories of resources.
Yeah. That makes sense. So then I can sit down, do the call thing, and then think about what other things I can mirror or mimic, like when it comes to deadlines, or because it's a very deadline driven practice that I'm in. I have deadlines before we end up in court, when we're in court, after we're in court. And some of those time frames, I don't have control of getting stuff back right. It's either the client or the client's doctors or opposing counsel or the court, you know?
Right.
So I think I have to figure out how to lay out priorities so I'm not also feeling like I'm catching up, you know? And I don't generally, but when this happens, then I feel like I'm behind, right? And then you're like running this race trying to catch up because you have this deadline here and this deadline there. And anyway.
Right. It's tough when there's so many things that you can't control and people are getting things to you. But one thing you can do, especially when you understand like what your energy capacity is, but also like the time capacity, just like the limited number of hours in a day, or how many literal hours / days and weeks there are before the deadline hits.
Yeah.
And then being real, like kind of like, okay, if the deadline is 3 weeks from now and that's when court is, how can we reverse engineer this?
Yeah.
All the steps and deadlines along that way that we actually get all the information we need in a timely manner so that we're not scrambling last minute to get it all done. And of course, you know, that's not always how life goes, but you can use past experiences either working or not and say, how, like, if that didn't work for me, how do I want to set myself up better to have success in the future?
Yeah.
So as you're redoing your schedule and sort of deciding what to prioritize, what to delegate, how to make things more efficient with the things that you can control, it's helpful to be able to look back at your past experiences and use them as data that support your decision to do it differently and better and in a way that supports you, that buffers you, that builds you up instead of depletes you. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. Let me ask you this. So and maybe this part of the confusion, or I was making the confusion, when you have clients come to you about burnout, whether they're whatever spectrum they're on, does anybody ever have a sense of like, I feel busier, more tired now. I feel like I could have done this you know, years ago, I'm not that different. Why is this so hard? You know, I'm assuming burnout is the answer because our capacity's down, but that's part of the frustration. Why is this so much harder now than it was before? You know, how come I can't manage things like I used to, or I feel like I can't manage things like I used to, you know?
Right. For that, like when you reduce your capacity, yeah. Right? When you're exhausted, everything feels less possible.
Yeah.
You didn't say this yet on this call, but I remember now on your intake form that you mm-hmm. said like you're also likely perimenopausal.
Yes. And yeah.
I don't know if that it's really being talked to like this exactly, but I see this as like our hormones were also a resource that we've been utilizing.
Yeah.
For all the years of being a menstruating person.
Yeah.
They were a great resource, even though it annoyed us, even though PMS yeah. sucks, even though yeah. blah, 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 we had much more buffer because of the bountiful amount yeah. of estrogen, progesterone, testosterone yeah. we had floating in our bodies.
Yeah.
One thing I found really interesting when I learned about this is stress hormone, like to create cortisol, which is how your body, one of the ways it fights stress or helps you recover from a stressful experience, steals the building blocks of your sex hormones. So being stressed reduces yeah. your hormones. And then perimenopause is a time where naturally, yeah. on purpose, your body's waning these hormones because yeah. you're in a transition that's natural yeah. and healthy, but your resources are going away. So stress yeah. is depleting your resources. And then this time of life, just decrease yeah. in that all reduces your capacity and your capability.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So we think why, you know, there's no reason, like our mind says, there's yes, no like, reason I shouldn't be able to do what yep. I used to be able to do, but there's yep. actually a lot of valid reasons why you can't do what you used to be able to do. And there's no amount of pushing or thinking your way out of it, shooting your way out of it. There just yeah. isn't. It only makes it worse. It only depletes you further.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I'm assuming because I'm in my early 40s that'll just continue happening, you know, as I get older, because that's life, right?
So unfortunately, yes. I mean, of yeah. course, there's things you can do to support yourself during the perimenopausal transition into yeah. menopause, the day you stop, you know, a year after you stop bleeding, into postmenopausal period. And there's a lot of resources. So working with a holistic doctor. Yeah. Someone that can help you determine where you're at, what resources you need to feel better, whether that's bioidentical hormone therapy or mm-hmm. nutrients, or I don't, you know, there's a ton of different, yeah. other, yeah, yeah, likely all of the above. Once you're burnt out, you probably need a lot of different nutrients to nourish you and revitalize you. But that's the realm for more either your physician or like mm-hmm. a naturopath, functional yeah. medicine doctor. Acupuncturists can help sometimes too, depending on what you want to or how you want to recover. But some sort of healthcare practitioner is usually very supportive.
Yeah. So it sounds like one of the things that needs to happen is kind of like a, not on a big picture, on a step-by-step basis, almost like a shifting or restructuring of how I've been doing things essentially, right? And setting yes. up things in place to give more breathing room. Whether that means time in between things or taking things off my plate, if I can take things off my plate. I know I have listened to the podcast over time. And one of the things is, you know, what do I not like to do or don't want to do and kind of get off the plate if I can get off my plate.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, exactly. I call that personally in Unfried, I call that creating a new operating system.
Yeah.
Well, right. The old operating system. The old operating system worked in burnout culture mode, yeah. right? And it was depleting to you over time, slowly yeah. but surely, and then yeah. kind of exponentially, kind of as you hit perimenopause and as those resources dwindle. Going through Unfried, whether it's one-on-one or group with mm-hmm. me, over 5 months, I help you shift your operating system from burnout mode mm-hmm. to burnout recovery mode. So yeah. we do a lot of step-by-step exercises that help you. The web of causation is a great place to start. Like I mentioned mm-hmm. in the beginning, we go through that mm-hmm. exercise. We help you understand your story so you can start to have compassion instead of boo-hoo, whatever, get over it. You're like,
right.
life has been hard, and I can see now why it got me here. Right. And then we determined sort of helped you understand your capacity, but we do that more. We do specific exercises for all of this. What's your capacity? How to prune your life so that you fit your life into your capacity so that you stop spending too much energy. And then how do you rebuild? How do you restore? We focus on that. We focus on boundaries with yourself and with others. What does that look like? Why do we do that? We want to protect what we're cultivating. Because when you start filling up, you don't want to just spend it willy-nilly, right? So it's like, if you have a new operating system that puts your needs and the needs of your priorities first and foremost, it makes it easier to start to understand what to say yes to and what to say no to.
Yeah.
Knowing your values is another reason, or another like solidifier of that knowingness about yourself. We do that too. And then we do the scheduling piece. So we kind of did like a very quick version of all of that today. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, oh shoot, or if any of you listening are like, I need help step by step through this because I don't know. I just know dumpster fire and I can't look at it and parse out what I need to do. That's what I've created in Unfried. So know you're invited to that if that sounds good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds good. That's what it seems like. It's like I need a new operating system. I need to update my iOS.
No. Right. If only we could press a button and then it just goes beep, boop, 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 beep, beep, beep. And it happens.
Yeah.
But our body's like, alert, alert, not enough storage for the new operating
system.
That's
what it is. We don't have enough storage. We can't do it because you don't have enough storage.
Right. And like you said, you're like, oh crap. You know, I used to be able to do all this. And it feels like you don't have enough energy to make these changes because they take energy to do it. Doing it differently takes some energy. So you have to kind of like, that's why it's extra important to store some, because you're like, ooh, I need some more so I can make this change that requires something of me to do it differently and have that continue being like an upward spiral, like a snowball in the right direction. It's a precarious process, and it's why it takes so long. That's why it takes at least a year, if not 2 years. I mean, usually it's less if you're not fried to a crisp like you aren't, which is great, but it's at least a year.
Yeah. My concern was that if this keeps going this way, I'm going to end up being fried to a crisp. Like that was my concern.
Yeah. Well, let this be your just little heads up, like check engine light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your body has been giving you that like, oh, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't your engine does. Please like let yourself take some of these steps without your whole engine locking up and you not being able to drive anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And then as part of that, like nervous system regulation, I'm sure that's part of it is my nervous system is better today, but like I said, 2 weeks ago, it was all over the place. Like it was
right. And of course there's, you know, a lot of different nervous system regulation practices you can do, but I want to point out that when you create these boundaries, like we talked about, you talked about the one boundary. It's like, let me take control over what I can control and let me put this safety in place so that I can book these kinds of calls in this window. So I know what to expect. I can kind of relax in that window. I know what I'm doing. I don't have to switch hats a million times. Yeah. Doesn't that just feel safer?
It does. It really, really does. Yeah.
So creating that protected bubble of, I know what I'm going to do in this window is one way you create safety. That's nervous system regulation right there.
Yeah.
So you don't also have to meditate. You don't also have, I mean, you can,
right.
But especially in the beginning when you're like, I barely have time to do anything. Know that these little changes that you can control that you make that feel that help you go, oh, like, thankfully I have this, I created this for myself. Lean into that safety and let it actually relax you and like make a shift in your system. And then
that makes sense.
We add on bits of your life. We create the new operating system hopefully feels safer to you. At first it's weird because it's new.
Yeah.
But each little step you make that, you know, accumulate into your new operating system are how you create a life that feels safer, at least in the ways you can control.
Right.
And then that increases your buffer so that you can handle the things that are out of your control.
That makes a lot of sense. It also sounds very obvious when you say it out loud, but it's not obvious when you're in it. Like, you know,
I'm so glad. It seems obvious because I've spent a lot of time thinking about how to make it a step-by-step, like slow and steady, obvious process, because I know that's what a burnt out brain needs. And especially a high achieving, formerly high achieving brain that wants it done now. It's like, no, I need to speak to the part of you that needs it to be logical and understanding to work your way through it and feel confident about taking the amount of time it takes to do those changes to create a new operating system. Because if you don't buy in, if your logical mind doesn't buy in, it's doesn't often happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say it's taking the time to do it and then actually doing it and not falling back into what we know, right? Because it's all we know.
I'm sure. Right. And you will. I'm sure you will. There'll be days where you like can't handle holding the boundary. And in those moments, I hope that you won't beat yourself up and you'll instead be like, it's just a blip on the way to my new nervous system, new operating system. And I'm going to mess up because it's new. I'm a beginner at this. I might be a really great expert lawyer, but I am brand new at creating this operating system and I'm going to mess up and I'm just going to keep practicing.
Yeah.
So give yourself a little grace and some compassion for yourself that's learning something new in a really hard container. It's hard to do anything in a dumpster fire, right? Like,
yeah, it really is. It really is.
But we're creating little pockets of like cool. We're like putting the fire out in one little spot so that we can put a fire out in one little spot.
How do you, when people work in like a very, what's the word looking for? Like production driven industry, like how do you balance? And maybe there's not a right answer. It's just kind of figuring out how do you balance producing at a level that's expected or required while trying to almost like pull back a little bit, right? Because in a way, in theory, if this is done properly, then you should be able to work better. If we're talking just about work because you're regulated and you're more efficient and your brain is better and whatever. But in that in-between phase, I could picture some relapse on that end. Am I making sense, my question?
Yes. And I do think you just answered it yourself. Like you end up, even though we don't want to say you're aiming to be more efficient, you end up more efficient, right? The more resourced you are, the better you're taking care of yourself. You just are more efficient. You can do things quicker. You're not
on a fog.
Right. So it's a slow transition, but it does happen over time. And some people do need to step out a little bit and like take their foot off the gas pedal.
Yeah.
And I know that is hard in a production driven industry. And sometimes you have to have that hard conversation. You might just say like, hey, listen, because if there's someone like previewing the cases or you're talking to someone and be like, am I going to take this client on? You might be like, well, maybe so-and-so can at the firm, but I got to say no to this one. And let me pass it along to someone who maybe is resourced for it and give yourself a couple of easy cases for a little while and take the edge off.
Yeah. Cause there's going to be there'll be a change. There'll be a reduction. And then I guess it's the chips fall where they may, that's might just be a necessary process to get on the other side of it. You know, necessary phase rather.
Right. You know, some people, especially if you wait till you're a pile of ashes, sometimes you can't.
Yeah.
You can't not take a break of some kind. Either the job is so awful, you have to leave it, or your body's so broken down that you just need to stop. But most people can't. Everybody, you know, we need money to live in this current culture that we live in. And so stopping your source of income isn't often possible for people. Yeah. So creating micro breaks, as many micro breaks as you can throughout the day that come maybe in the 5-minute buffer between meetings or purchasing already made meals.
Yeah.
If money is more of a resource, you know, it's like purchase a already made meal. So you don't even have to think about groceries and then dinner and then cooking and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like, so we create whatever breaks where we can, create breaks where we can. And it adds up teeny tiny little breaks at a time.
But that little bit adds up and it can be a big result because you have, it's like the drip.
Yes. It's a drip into a bucket that eventually does get full, but it takes time, which is why we said, you know, it's like, nobody wants to hear the recovery takes a year or two, but that's why it's one drip at a time.
Yeah. That's probably the hardest part is saying, it's a slow go, right? Still happen, but it's a slow go. And it might feel crappy in the process, right? But it'll get better.
It will get better. It'll be bumpy. It is not linear. It is sort of exponential over time, but it's a bumpy road on that exponential curve. And please give yourself credit for seeking help and understanding before you were a pile of ashes on the floor.
Thank you. It felt weird though, because it took me several times to even fill anything out. I was like, I'm not burnout. Do I really, I went back and forth and I was like, I'm just going to fill it out and see what happens, you know?
Right. Because, you know, Kate and I we've not argued. We kind of agree with each other that we don't know if burnout is really truly preventable, because most people don't believe it until they're like, cannot keep going. But if we can catch you in this place where you're teetering between like the wildfire blazing and like parts of you are falling out, you know, are like turning to ash, then I think we can shorten your burnout recovery process.
Yeah.
So this is a much better place to be in. And honestly, like by the time this airs, we will have had an episode of someone who went through Unfried with me say just that. She wasn't as fried as a lot of the people that she was in her cohort with. And she bounced back so much faster. And so her message was like, don't wait until you're completely fried. Like if you think you are burnt out enough, you do not have to wait until you are a pile of ashes. So yes, just give yourself some pats on the back and some validation that you do not have to get worse before you can get better.
Thank you. And this is, like I told you before, I haven't really talked to anybody about this before. So this was a big step for me to even be like, hey, I think I'm not doing well. Can you tell me if I'm not, you know?
Well, then give yourself credit for that too, because it's not easy to talk about it. Like, you didn't say you felt like a failure, but it feels like you're failing, and it's hard to let anybody in on what you don't want to admit out loud.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're in this phase, like you feel like you're failing everywhere, like at home, at work, everywhere.
Yeah. And that completely sucks. And it feels like if you surrender to that and admit it, you're only going to go down more.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's like actually more of a turning point when you can admit that to yourself. That's when real change starts to happen. So thank you for being brave.
Thank you. Thank you for talking to me.
You're so welcome. All right, Jenny. I look forward to hearing about what taking that first step of repeat it back to, what's your one step? I know we ended up talking about a lot of things, but what's your one step? I want to hear you like be clear on what your next best step is.
So for right now, my best step is going to be to set and keep boundaries at work. And I'm specifically going to focus on what I can control, which is calls that I can that can be scheduled, and set it on particular days and particular times. And then from that, I'm going to see if I can then add something else after that and something else after that. But that's what I'm going to start with. And I'm going to hold it myself to that too, because I likely will be the first one to break that boundary. So,
right. And how will you reiterate to yourself that it's a worthwhile boundary to hold?
Because doing so is going to help me feel better and have more capacity to then not be in a rut or in a muck, right? So if I hold these boundaries and I keep to them, then it'll let me then give me capacity to do that with other things. And then eventually over time, I'm going to have the space that I need, so I don't end up a pile of ashes.
Does that feel like enough that in the moment of like, am I going to say yes or no to this call, that you'll come back to that and be like, I matter. I'm on a burnout recovery journey. And if I say yes to this, it's a detour.
I'm going to tell myself, like, if I say yes to this, I'm going to end up a pile of ashes. I'm just going to go straight to the ashes, and hopefully that'll trigger me and say, don't be a pile of ashes. Say no to this, or you're setting yourself on fire. So, or not even, I'm already on fire. You're adding fuel to the fire.
Yeah. Okay, great. That seems,
I'm going to try.
That seems like it might work. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, good. Yep. I'll follow up in a couple of weeks and we'll talk about it. I hope to hear a success story, but even if it's not, that doesn't mean you can't try again.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
You're so welcome. All right, Fried Fam. If you see yourself in Jenny's story, know that we're here for you. We're here for you. You can go to the Facebook group, ask a question, get started on your burnout recovery journey. You can come to our office hours where Kate and I meet on Zoom and we give you a little bit of coaching from the bottom of our hearts, free to you. Whatever it is that you can do, or you can sign up for a call, a one-on-one consult with me, and we'll do exactly what Jenny and I did today for you. There are resources. We are here as resources for you. Please ask for what you need and get started on your burnout recovery today. All right, Fried Fam, take care.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.